much of your work, it seems to me, at least in this, reflected in this book, is very much in an ekphrastic context. And there's a poem that I thought would be good to read, poem for Wolfgang Leib, and it's just a couple of pages after the where you were reading before. But
sure, Wolfgang Leib.
Leib, okay. Yes, of course, it's German, so the second vowel would be the one that would be emphasized. So here, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if any setup's required.
Okay. Poem for Wolfgang Leib. A life of collecting pollen from hazelnut bushes, a life of gathering word grains to find all you have wanted, all you have waited to say. Five mountains we cannot climb, hills we cannot touch. Perhaps we are only here to say house, bridge, or gate. A passage to somewhere else, yellow molecules spooned and sifted from a jar, filled with sunlight pouring milk over stone. You are the energy that breaks form, building wax houses pressed from combs, a wax room set upon a mountain, an offering of rice, nowhere, everywhere, the song of Shams.
This ekphrastic impulse, it's poetry just to talk about someone's process. I mean, just to document it, there's pure poetry in that.
There is. Wolfgang Leib has been a poet who's, he's a sculptor. He's a sculptor and an installation artist. He's an artist who's been incredibly important to me for many years. And he actually taught me things in his sculpture about how to think about form organically in my poetry. So one of the pieces that inspired this particular poem was a sculpture of his called The Five Mountains Not to Climb On. It's a series of 3-inch tall pollen mountains that are like these little cones or pyramids that you see like installed on the ground behind like a plexiglass wall, basically. And he was an artist who had a show at a museum where I was working in the education department, and I'd go down to this exhibition and I'd just stare at his work. He makes it out of flower pollen in many cases, and so the pigmentation, the use of color is really unreal. It's like nothing that you can find because it's straight out of nature. So I stared at his sculpture for a long time before writing that poem, and when I finally did write the poem, you'll notice that the stanzas are in these sort of triangulated shapes, you know, that were really a reference point back to the sculpture. And in a lot of my work, I'm interested in writing about the processes of art making, because I think that there's something for the poet to learn there about the ways in which we use our materials, which are words or language, and how we move them around a page, that there is something in the materiality of language that we can also draw from as artists use their materials in sculpture or painting.
Sounds like a nod to language poetry.
Could be.
Right. In the book, you also talk about form and how form is more organic for you, except in the case of haiku.
Sure.
So, in other words, in that particular poem and the way you've shaped it, it's an allusion to the work. So the form is, of course, influenced or related to the work that you're discussing in it.
Right, and I think that the overarching project of Enso, too, also has this very organic form around the revisitation of gesture and topics that come throughout my work that are circular, right? So I think it's taken me a long time to feel that I actually do have an engagement with form. It's just different than maybe a lot of poets who may work with traditional forms, inherited forms, versus found forms, which is what I'm more interested in.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Denise Levertov say form is never more than a revelation of content? And wouldn't that describe what you're talking about?
Yes.
Fair enough. Light Rain is a poem in the book. You don't have to read it necessarily, but I'm wondering, of course, there's a James Turrell installation at the Henry Art Gallery,
mm-hmm.
and that's got to be a Turrell poem.
It is, yeah. It is. There's a sequence of Turrell poems that I've written over the years. Anytime I go to a James Turrell installation, I write a poem about it. So I've written one about a decommissioned Terrell that's at the Nasher Sculpture Garden in Dallas, and there was one at the Mattress Factory in Pittsburgh, one in Pomona at the college. But James Terrell is also a very interesting artist to me that has come back into my work over the years.
Plans to go to the crater?
Well, now that Kanye has funded that it will get finished.
Good for him, by the way. For
I know. I am dying to go to Roden Crater. It's a very hard place to get an invitation to if you don't know the right people. I don't know when the project will actually be finished. I've heard about people going Renegade and looking at satellite maps to figure out where Roden Crater is and getting lost in the desert trying to find it. But I have some friends who have a very good idea of how to get there. It's very close to the Navajo Nation in Arizona. So someday I hope to make it there. Yes.
It just occurs to me that Terrell obviously comes from a Quaker tradition, and his installations are an allusion to that, at very least. Sitting around in an oval looking at the sky sounds like a very Quaker thing to do, from what I can understand. Mm-hmm. But there's also a very strong spiritual component to everything that you do that's informed by your Buddhism and by your Buddhist vows. So perhaps that's one of the reasons you'd be attracted to a person and their work like James Terrell.
Terrell's work is like so stripped down without artifice, and I think that His installations are like poetry without words, really. I'm drawn to them because they allow me to experience my mind in a different way. And I suppose that's something that I would aspire for in my poetry too, that affects people in such a way that they have a different relationship to their mind.
Talk about the bookmaking class you took from Peter Madden and the connection between text and the physicality of the book. Perhaps talking about a previous book, Sightings, that you... Was it an X-Acto knife that you took to? It was an X-Acto knife.
Yes. Yeah.
Knox probably had a need to do laundry when he thought that you might be doing something like that to it. So, right...
Knox and I actually talked about in this book, like, there's going to be a book inside the book. There's going to be a haiku book that's embedded inside a pocket that's adhered to the interior of the book. We had talked about at one point my hand binding that book, which it would have been fine. It would have taken a long time, but I think ultimately he decided that he'd have the printer do it, which is kind of a relief. But yeah, I am very interested in the idea of kind of these more human touches that are made to very finished feeling kind of products, I guess. So you asked me about a class or some work that I did with a book artist named Peter Madden. That would have been back in the early 2000s, I want to say, when I was living in the Boston area. And I went out to Provincetown Fine Arts Work Center, and I got a scholarship to take a class, and I decided instead of taking a poetry workshop, I wanted to try book arts. I had lots of poems that I was working on. My first collection, Equivalents, was going to come out that fall, and I don't know why. I mean, I brought those poems into Peter's class and thought, oh, maybe it would be interesting to lay them out in different ways, or to break them up over a page, or, you know, to just... look at them in a different kind of structure or format. And so he taught me, you know, a variety of bookmaking structures like folding, accordion style, ox plow. And I think we might have done some glued bindings as well. But I think this sort of practice of deconstructing the poems and looking at how they might lay out over, you know, a different kind of format of book, right? So as writers, we may work on a typewriter, or we might handwrite things on a page, or typically we're working on a computer and breaking things out over a multi-page manuscript. And there was just really something very powerful about taking the words and deconstructing them, pulling them apart, and being able to look at them in different ways and imagine how the experience of then reading them pulled apart on inside a structure could affect the experience of reading the poem, I guess, or reveal something that maybe wouldn't have been seen if you'd just been looking at it in kind of a more traditional format, I guess. I think what I can say is this interest with book arts has continued with me for the past year. I've been doing a letterpress and book arts residency with a place in Georgetown called Edition Studio. And I've been learning how to hand set and print, letterpress print type. And I'm working on a couple of small book arts type projects. Can I tell you about
that? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I'm paired with working with a really wonderful Turkish-American artist named Zeynep Alev, and she's put together this design for this particular poem that I've written. It's called Cloisters. Cloisters is about nightingale floors in Japan. So nightingale floors are kind of a very sort of primitive security system. So in places like Naijo Castle, these wooden floors were installed in the castle, and the idea is that as people walk across these floors, they squeak and they make the sounds as if a nightingale is singing. They were a very primitive security system for if people broke into the castle to steal treasures or to steal women. So this poem that I've written is about this really unusual architectural thing. And so the structure that Zeynep and the person that we're working with who's helping to advise us on designing these books, the idea is that it's going to be this kind of folded accordion shape that's bound on either end by wooden boards. So rather than using cardboard or book board to adhere the covers to, the idea is that it would be adhered to blocks of wood, and this wood would be evocative of perhaps the wooden floors, of the nightingale floors. And we're thinking that we'll probably scorch them or kind of let them undergo a process where we'll blowtorch them and heat them up, and it'll scorch and seal the book basically and sort of provide this really beautiful finish. But inside the book, we're going to embed a sound element. So for instance, you know, like you might get like a birthday card and it plays a little song when you open it up. So our thinking is that we're going to take one of these devices, which you can buy very easily, and download a file onto it that will play the sound of a nightingale floor. So when the book is opened, you'll hear the sound of these nightingale floors, and you know, as you're opening and closing it, you'll hear that sound effect, and the idea is that like it would play for the duration of how long it would take to read the poem.